Okay, so first of all, thanks for coming, and I would like to thank the organizers as well for giving me the opportunity to speak and to be here, first of all. So, well, Michael has told you what the title of the talk is, and that's the plan. So, first of all, I will say a few introductory words about what group field theory is, but the main part of the talk would be describing the general formalism of group field theories. And basically this first part should approximately take a half of the talk. So for those of you who do not know about group field theories, then I would encourage you to try to focus mainly on this first part, because that's really the basic. And for those of you who do know about group field theory, well, you can sleep, but just make sure you wake up by the second part of the talk, because there we'll present a perspective on what group field theories are, a personal perspective, I think. I don't know how much it is shared by people in the community. And then I will also present some results, unpublished. So first about the relation with loop quantum gravity. Second, about the relation between group field theories and simplicial quantum gravity. Then in the very final part of the talk, I hope not to be rushing too much in that the final part, I will sketch an hypothesis and a research program about regarding studying the continuum regime for these theories. I will first review briefly the current strategies coming from other approaches, but seen from the perspective of group field theories. Then, as I said, I will sketch an hypothesis and a research program, and I'll try to stress the many open questions regarding this issue. And then I will present some new results, again unpublished, about the Hamiltonian analysis, the Fock structure, and their relation, their importance for the emergence of the continuum in the final part. I mean, the Hamiltonian analysis and Fock structure of group field theories. Okay, and then I will conclude, probably in 30 seconds. Okay, so we know what group field theories are and why they are important. They are the basic formalism for that we have for studying microscopic physics and many particle physics. And that ranges from particle physics to atomic and physics, condensed matter, and so on. So we have field action for the field, partition function, in the discrete regime, so when we can study processes in, where we're interested in studying processes involving only a few quanta, then it's very good to use the perturbative expansion of the partition function, so the expansion in Feynman diagrams. Each Feynman amplitude can be interpreted as some of the histories for these few particles involved in the process we are studying. Then there is a continuum regime that usually involves many quanta, and that there you don't really usually use the Feynman diagram expansion. It's not the most convenient language. You either study directly the action, classical solutions and similar in either Lagrangian or Hamiltonian form, or you do statistical field theory in the Hamiltonian form, for example, or you go to develop effective field theories that describe the physics in different regimes. And again, do the corresponding either statistical field theory, or you study the quantum theory in Lagrangian form, but still, you work in a different way, and you don't really use Feynman diagrams as a definition of the theory. Then, suppose we were hoping to have something like this for quantum gravity, a quantum field theory for quantum gravity. The immediate questions would be, well, first of all, a quantum field theory on rich space-time. We know that the quantum field theory of gravitons does not work as a fundamental theory. I mean, of course, it works very well, as we have been told, as an effective field theory, but it itself is not a fundamental theory, and the theory itself tells you that it is not fundamental. And then, in general, we know that quantum gravity is supposed to explain to us the origin and the properties of space-time itself. So it is a conceptual wrong turn to try to define it as a quantum field theory on a given space-time. Well, that's basically the issue of background independence, the way I see it. then it can be, if it is to be a quantum field theory of some sort, it has to be a quantum field theory of some sort of internal space, an auxiliary space. And as I wrote there, the local symmetry group would be a natural choice. And then the second immediate question is, a quantum field theory of what? What are the quanta? Again, gravitons do not work as fundamental quanta for the same reason as I explained before, earlier. They should be, in some sense, to be understood, to be clarified, and to be made rigorous, they should be quanta of space itself. So if you want fundamental excitation of space around nothing, this would be hopeless if we were not already having hints, suggestions, results from various approaches to quantum gravity, loop quantum gravity, matrix models, simplicial quantum gravity, and so on. Okay. Well, group field theories are non-local, in a sense that I will clarify, field theories on a group manifold. And they can be interpreted as second quantized theories, of course, but both of simplicial geometry and of canonical quantum gravity, so a quantum field theory of spin network. Then, I think I'll skip all this brief introduction. I'll go directly to the formula so that I can take my time in explaining you the details and in case answer to questions already at that level. So, let me just mention one thing. So the key property of this group field theory that raised interest in these models is the fact that you wrote down a field theory on a certain group manifold, you expand the quantum theory in Feynman diagrams, and these Feynman diagrams are interpreted as discrete space-times, meaning simplicial complexes, and the Feynman amplitudes associated to these Feynman diagrams are the interpretation of simplicial path integrals, or some over histories formulation of simplicial quantum gravity. So you see immediately that this is just a generalization of matrix model for two-dimensional gravity to higher dimensions. Okay, and both geometry and topology are going to be dynamical. So let's focus on the part of the story that is best understood, although I will still say very little, the discrete regime. So I'm not going to put many references in the text because I'm lazy, not because there are not many results or because I don't know who did what. So I just refer to some reviews where you can find all the results with the correct citations and references. Okay, so let's start with the kinematics. The basic object of a generic group field theory in D dimensions, so a field theory that wants to describe D-dimensional quantum gravity, is a complex field over D copies of a group manifold, so the direct product of a certain group manifold D times. So that's configuration space, so the one that I was... So this is configuration space. The field is a function of D group elements. Think of them as if it was just a field theory on R3, on flat Euclidean space, in three dimension, for example, it would be just a function of X, Y, Z. Here you have D group elements. As I said, this is configuration space. You can expand in momentum space, that means you can do harmonic analysis on the group, and the role of momenta, and the role of momenta is played by the representations of the same group. And these functions, the Wigner functions, have the same role as the exponential of IPX in usual Fourier transform, when you go from configuration space in flat space to momentum space, or momentum space. Okay? So, okay, so a first hint to the interpretation. You should think of the field, beta of the quanta corresponding to the field, as fundamental building blocks of quantum geometry. And they have a dual interpretation. You can represent them as D minus one simplices, so in three dimensions, triangles, in four dimensions, tetrahedra, and so on. So one dimension lower than the dimension of space-time. Or you can also think of them as vertices of a certain dual graph that I'm going to relate to spin networks in the following. The variables also have a geometric interpretation. The group elements are gravitational anomies, and the representations are D minus two volumes, elementary volumes, and it can be justified in several ways. So this is the three-dimensional example. You have a field, configuration space, momentum space, and can be interpreted as either a triangle. This again is the three-dimensional case. So the field, the quanta are D3 minus 1, so two simplices, triangles, with the group elements or the representations attached to each of the edges of the triangle. Or you can go to the dual picture and you have a vertex with three links coming out of it, labeled by the same type of variables, and they are dual to each other in this sense. Okay, then you impose certain symmetries. I'm not going to go into any detail about this, but you impose some symmetries on the action and on the field itself. And, well, there are several ways to impose them. Let me go fast on this part. Because of the symmetries, in particular, because of this symmetry under the diagonal action of the group, so the simultaneous shift of all the arguments of the field by a certain group element, if you impose the symmetry, then the field, when you expand in moles, decomposes into intertwiners, so not just in representation functions, but in representation functions contracted with intertwiners of the same group. Okay. And just as I consider a single triangle, or a bunch of triangles, or a bunch of vertices, I can consider extended pieces of a quantum space, so glue together either the triangles or the vertices to form extended structures, either graphs or D-1 triangulations. Okay, so a generic state is going to be a large simplicial D-1 complex with geometric data attached to the edge lengths or to the faces according to the dimension, or equivalently is going to be a spin network. Okay. Then your model is defined by a choice of classical action. So in particular, you choose a kinetic term and a vertex term. So this is the generic form. The key property is that of these models, at least those that have been most studied and developed, is that you choose the combinatorics of the arguments in the vertex to represent the gluing of the D-2 faces of a D-simplex. That means the following. Take this picture here. I said you can interpret, so again, this is the three-dimensional case. You can interpret the field as a triangle, which has three edges. And so it has three arguments. So you take an interaction term, which is a 5^4 term in three dimensions, as I said. So you have four fields, and you identify the arguments of the field in such a way as to represent the gluing of these triangles across common edges. Okay? So this is represented by the combinatorics of the arguments here. I don't need to be more explicit about the expression of the interaction. The geometric picture is you take four fields and the arguments are paired in such a way as to represent the combinatorics of a D-dimensional simplex, a three-simplex, a tetrahedron in this example. The kinetic term, instead, represents the gluing of two tetrahedra across a common triangle. So you just identify the edges of the triangle as seen from one tetrahedron or from the other. And this also has a dual picture in terms of lines of propagation. So these are three lines, each representing one of the arguments of the field. And this is the pairing of the arguments in the vertex. In this sense, it is a non-local field theory. If it was an ordinary field theory, then the three arguments will be all identified at a vertex, at a single vertex. That's what would happen. This is what happens in usual field theory. Okay. As I said, this is just the general structure of the action. Then you can go on and write down different models. The simplest one is when you just take delta functions, identifying arguments of the field. So a vertex and a kinetic term are just products of delta functions. You can be a little bit more sophisticated and write down differential operators, provided, again, the combinatorics of the arguments is the same as the one I explained. Okay, we will see this model later on. And then you can write down the equations of motion for all these theories for all the different models that you can write down. Up to now, there's been no extensive study of classical dynamics. for these group field theories. There's work in progress that I know, and it's going to be quite very interesting, but it's not appeared yet, and I don't know exactly how much they have done. Okay, then we go to the quantum dynamics. And the quantum dynamics is defined by the partition function of the field theory. Up to now, the only understanding, the only real definition of this partition function is in terms of the Feynman expansion. So gammas are the Feynman diagrams, lambda is the coupling constant of the theory, n of gamma is the number of vertices of interaction, which is the same as the number of the simplices of the dual triangulation, and z of gamma is the Feynman amplitude. Okay, you then start constructing these Feynman diagrams. You just glue together vertices with propagators. And the building blocks are, of course, lines of propagations. It is better to represent with the labeled strands, each, as I said, representing one of the arguments of the field. And then you have vertices of interaction with the combinatorics that I described in the previous slide. Actually, in two slides earlier. And as I said, the vertices are dual, combinatorially dual, to d-dimensional simplices. When you start doing this, you build actually something more than an ordinary Feynman graph. There is extra structure, so you get not only two cells, something like loops, but you also get bubbles, so three cells, bounded by the above two cells. In any case, the combinatorics is by construction such that the Feynman diagram is dual to a d-dimensional simplicial complex. So this is again the three-dimensional case, and this is the dual picture in terms of lines of propagations. You see you have a vertex with a certain combinatorics of arguments, as I said, representing this combinatorics, and propagators with several strands, several lines of propagations representing the gluing. So the general property is that Feynman diagrams, I shouldn't really call graphs because they are not graphs, are fat graphs or cellular complexes topologically dual to d-dimensional triangulated pseudo-manifolds or general simplicial complexes a priori of all topologies, meaning that because you build up these complexes from the fundamental building blocks without any restriction when you do the perturbative expansion, any topology is included in the sum. So we are defining quantum gravity as a sum of simplicial complexes of all topologies, with this topology generated as an interaction process. Then the Feynman amplitudes can be written, of course, both in configuration space, in terms of group elements, as functions of group elements integrated over, or in momentum space, meaning as functions or representations of the group summed over or integrated over according to the group. In momentum space, these are spinform models. And this is the reason for the interest in these models in the first place, I guess. And what you can show is that if you just insert appropriate observables, so functions of the field, then you end up writing a sum over spinforms, so labeled two complexes, evolution histories of spin networks, interpolating between some initial and final spin network dictated by this the form of these observables. So we are at the same time we obtained an expression for the transition amplitudes between spin networks as two-point functions or three or four-point functions and so on. But at the same time, there is an interpretation of these Feynman amplitudes as discrete path integrals, and I will clarify this in a second. In practice, most models, group field theory models, are actually derived from a knowledge of the Feynman amplitudes up to now, and which in turn are derived from a discretization of some continuum gravity action. So, the idea is that you first try to understand what should be the right Feynman amplitude, and this, as I said, is a kind of a simplicial path integral, so what you do is to discretize some continued gravity action, put it on a certain triangulation, work it out as a Feynman amplitude, and obtain the field theory that gives the same Feynman amplitude in perturbation theory. Okay, How much time do I have? A little bit earlier than halfway. Oh, great. Okay, so the simplest example is this one, I guess. Consider V equal 3, so again the three-dimensional case, the group being just SU2. You take a real field with the symmetry that I mentioned. You impose the symmetry through this projection operator that is basically an integral over the group with a single argument for each of the, for each field. Well, then it just turns out that the Feynman amplitudes of this model have this form. So you get a product over all the dual faces, so the two cells of the Feynman diagrams, with an amplitude being a delta function, and the argument of this amplitude, of this delta function, is a product of group elements along the dual links, so the links on the boundary of this face. And this, these are your your configuration variables, and so you integrate them over. Well, this is an interesting model and is believed to be a very good a good quantization of three-dimensional Riemannian gravity, also because you can derive the same amplitudes by starting from the action, the first-order action for gravity in three dimensions. You discretize it in a certain way. I don't need to go into the details. I mean, they're not really relevant at this point, but just keep in mind the procedure. So you start with a continuum action. You discretize it. Of course, there are ambiguities in any discretization process. You pick up a choice that seems to satisfy all the right symmetries and to have all the right properties. And then you write down the path integral for this. Well, and the path integral for this discrete theory is exactly the Feynman amplitude that I gave, that I showed in the previous transparency, the previous slide. With the group elements playing the role, as I announced at the beginning, of discretized connection, holonomies of a connection, like in lattice gauge theory. You can write the same model in momentum space, of course. The same Feynman amplitudes we know can be written in momentum space, and this gives the so-called Ponzano-Regge spinform model. And this is just a rewriting of the same Feynman amplitude in different variables in momentum space. And you can further relate this partition function to discrete gravity by showing that this function of representations that you get one for each vertex of the Feynman diagram, meaning once for each tetrahedron of the simplicial complex, is given in some limit by the cosine of the Regge action, so the action for discrete simplicial gravity in three dimension, in this case, with the representations playing the role of edge lengths. Okay, am I at half? Okay, thanks. Okay, that was the first half. So whoever knew about that, please wake up. The way I see Goodfield theories is not only at least as a theory of describing the dynamics of spin networks, definitely not as some auxiliary field theory that you use to do something else, and not as only as a theory for simplicial gravity, for simplicial quantum gravity. So I see it more as a general framework for many discrete approaches, and I'll try to be more specific here. So definitely, let us explore the relation between group field theories and loop quantum gravity. I mentioned that already. The boundary states of group field theories are spin networks, in general based on the full Lorentz group. That's the group you pick up in most models, and not on SU2, not in four dimensions, and not in the Lorentzian case. But the basic structure is very similar, and so you're right if you interpret it as a theory describing the dynamics of the states, so the dynamics of spin networks. You can actually be more precise in this. So really you can motivate group field theories as a second quantization of any theory based on spin network wave functions. You just rewrite these wave functions as multiparticle states with the vertices of the spin networks as graphs, as particles, and you second quantize. Let me mention how you do that. And when you do this, of course, you have a map between any, you have a correspondence between any operator you can write down in first quantization, so in loop quantum gravity, and a correspondent second quantile, so group field theory counterpart. So let me describe this work in progress. I'll describe you just the basic first step, and then we can discuss more about the rest in private. So you take a generic spin network function. This is nothing particularly exciting or funny. It's something that I think everybody knows, but nobody bothered writing it down, at least as far as I know. And the interesting part should come later. It's not this first step. So you take a generic spin network wave function. There is a group element for each edge given a certain graph. Here I'm neglecting orientation stuff, but it can be taken care of. And you actually have a gauge invariant function, meaning that you impose a certain invariance under the action of the group at each vertex. So this is your spin network functional. Now you can consider a different type of object, a bunch of vertices labeled by group elements, so one separate group element for each edge referring to each vertex. So it's like if you want a bunch of open spin network vertices or just open spin networks. So you take a function of this group element, so there are three in this case for each vertex, and I label the fact that there are three by a vector index, and you impose the same gauge invariance under the action of the group at each vertex. And then what you can do is, you can impose that these vertices actually are grouped together in a certain way that reflects the combinatorics of the graph that you started with, and that's where the dependence on the graph comes in. By imposing additional invariances. So it's a sort of, you start with this type of functions and you impose an additional symmetry. Well, and these symmetrized functions are exactly the original spin network functionals. So spin network functionals are, so you can interpret each vertex as a particle in quotation marks. So a generic multi-particle state will be given by a bunch of these particles, a bunch of these vertices. A subclass of states will satisfy this additional symmetry, and this is the are the states represented by the spin network wave function. Okay, again, it's not particularly enlightening. It's cool, however, that you can, under this interpretation, so a generic functional of the form I introduced, interpret as a multi-particle state with now the labels indicating different particles. Labeling different particles. You see the spin network function is a sort of symmetrized version. You impose a restricted dependence on the arguments. But then, just as you do in ordinary multi-particle theory, you pick up any book on many-particle physics or on quantum field theory, first 10 pages, or you go to the original paper by Falk, which is just the standard treatment even now, and you just follow it. Under this interpretation, you start with a multi-particle state, you go on defining a field, and from that, an action. If you do the same for these structures, you take these original multi-particle functions depending on group elements, you define creation annihilation operators, the single particle states are labeled by momenta being given by the representations plus additional parameters. These are the single particle wave functions for given modes, for given momenta, if you want. And then you go on, you just define the field, and that's exactly the field in the group field theory and the action and so on. Again, not that enlightening. It's something that I guess everybody knew, but it's nice to see it written it down. And so, as I said, you can go from any first quantized operator to any second, to the second quantized group field theory counterpart. And so on. Okay, let me keep going from where I left. No, wait. The important thing, if this were just a kinematical thing, that would be not particularly interesting. The point is that just as usual field theories describe the dynamics of many particle states, well, group field theories define a dynamics, a second quantized dynamics for these wave functions, for these spin network functions. In particular, the group field theory's classical equations of motion are basically the quantum equations of motion of the first quantized spin network functionals, just as in usual field theory. And that led to the proposal by Laurent Friedel that the group field theory perturbs the expansion at three levels, so when you basically impose the classical equations of motion, And by the way, this imposes automatically trivial topology on the graphs, defines the physical scalar product for loop quantum gravity. And I'm not going to elaborate more on that. The real open issues is to construct a spin group fit theories which have an explicit relation with canonical quantization in the either the SU2 form, so the usual SU2 loop quantum gravity, and that in practice will mean either find a specific group fit theory that gives the new model by Roberto and Jonathan Carlo, or some other closely related, not maybe different one, but again based on SU2 spin networks. And this direction is being explored. Or the other possibility is to actually find the link with Lorentzian spin networks, meaning full covariant spin networks based on the Lorentz group in four dimensions, and then make the link with the version of loop quantum gravity, although not really developed at the same stage as the traditional one, by Sergei Alexandrov. And then the group field theory will provide a dynamics for the same. But let me point out one thing. So the connection loop quantum gravity is kind of clear, I would say, overall, at least the general picture, modulo these important open issues. But it's obvious that there is much more in group field theory than in loop quantum gravity, simply because, well, we go beyond tree level. And we know that there is much more than tree level in any field theory. Again, now let me mention the link with simplicial quantum gravity. So this is the partition function of group field theories, expanded in Feynman amplitudes. And as I said, the Feynman amplitudes are dual to triangulations. And these amplitudes have the interpretation of a sum over geometric data with a certain amplitude weighting them, so like a simplicial path integral. So you expect, the general picture is the following. If you fix the triangulation, that means you restrict your considerations to only a single Feynman diagram, then the group field theory defines the simplicial sum over geometries. So there is a restriction, and this is morally a simplicial path integral for any given group field theory. The relation with dynamical triangulation, again, the overall picture, and dynamical triangulations are the other, and I would say more successful approach to simplicial quantum gravity. The relation with dynamical triangulations is also in principle clear, but what you have to do is to freeze the geometric data. So you drop this sum. That means that there is a restriction of the original group field theory partition function that gives you a partition function for dynamical triangulations. So you have a sum over all triangulations and an amplitude that depends only on the combinatorics of that triangulation and additional parameters, for example, the coupling constant of the group field theory. And this is another way to define a simplicial path integral. At this level, you immediately suspect that you're including a bit too much. We know from work in dynamical triangulations that there are problems in dealing with different than trivial topologies. And maybe you actually need to restrict even further, so to go to the causal dynamical triangulations framework that Jan described to us yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, anyway, earlier. And in order to do this, if you want to do it, the key issue is to find what is the quantum field theory meaning, so at the level of the group field theory, or the restrictions that give you CDT, so causal dynamical triangulations, from the general dynamical triangulation setting. Okay, but the key issue for understanding the link with the simplicial quantum gravity in a proper way is to find a specific group field theory, at least one, or a class of them, with the amplitude equal to the exponential of the rejection, because that's the amplitude on which all the simplicial quantum gravity approaches are based. Of course, you need the exponential of the rejection times some measure, maybe complicated, for each triangulation. Most likely, coming from spin form or from group field theories, the relevant version of Rejek calculus is a first-order one. For example, in three dimensions, one given by independent variables being the edge lengths and some holonomies of a connection. And there is an action like this written down by Caselle, Dada, and Magnier based on the Poincaré group, but there are other versions as well. So you expect an action roughly of this form. Now, let me just mention the difference between usual spin form models, which are the known groove field theories, Feynman amplitudes, and yet to come Regge-like ones. Whatever the dimension, the differences are basically the same, and both for BF gravity, so 3D, or proper gravity in higher dimensions. So the first thing is that there is a difference between a path integral, Regge-like or GR-like path integral, and a symmetrized one, which is the case for usual spinform models. For example, usual spinform models, as I said, in 3D are based on the quantization of BF theory. And you can rewrite the partition function for BF theory as a sum of two contributions given by positive integration over positive trials and negative trials. And this is like taking the real part of a GR, of the usual GR path integral. And that's explains why you get the cosine of the Regge action in usual Ponzano-Regge model. And the difference between a symmetrized path integral and a proper path integral, a more usual path integral for gravity, has been emphasized and discussed in many ways and many things known and many others not known by Teitelbaum and Halliwell and Hartle, Giddings and Strominger's and many others. So in particular, a result of this symmetrization is that instead of getting complex amplitudes like you would get for Regge or GR-like path integrals, you get real ones. And indeed, usual spinform models are real, have real amplitudes. And then there is also a difference between Lagrangian symmetries and canonical symmetries that I'm not going to develop much on. Okay, so one strategy that one may try, at first at least, is to introduce extra variables, so not being confined to only group elements or representations, in order to reproduce this duplication of variables in first-order Regge calculus or in first-order BF and so on. Okay, now I report to, again, on some more work in progress. And, well, what I say is a result, and we're still in the process of developing and building up on that result and analyzing what can go wrong. So consider a specific group field theory and take the three-dimensional example. Riemann and Lorentzian makes some practical differences, but no real big differences. And consider a complex field based on both group elements and some additional real parameters. I call them S. So this is the three-dimensional case, so there are three group elements and three real parameters. And the usual symmetry under the group action, so acting only on the group elements. And this alpha just labels whether you take the field or the complex conjugate. This encodes the orientation dependence. Well, you can see this action, well, these are two forms of the action in configuration space with respect to the S variables and in momentum space with respect to the S variables. I call the corresponding conjugate variables S and M. The kinetic term is the only real crucial part, also because this has been cut out by the PDF conversion. So look at the kinetic term. This is like a Schrödinger differential operator, and there is one of them for each of the arguments of the field. The partial derivative is over this S variable, and the box is the Laplacian on the group. And again, you can do this in Riemannian and Lorentzian case alike. And in momentum space, you get something like a Klein-Gordon operator if M was only positive. Seven. I can make it. The usual models are obtained when you go to the so-called static ultra-local restriction. So you just drop the derivatives, and even with the same variables, you go to pure delta functions. You get the usual models. In these models, what you get is that the generic Feynman amplitude in the GM variables, so before the integration over them, is a very complicated measure that I wanted to write down only because, otherwise you may think that I'm just... I'm faking it. So you have a very complicated but explicit measure. Depending on... So for each edge, this depends... This N is the number of vertices... number of tetrahedra sharing that edge. And M is the variable introduced before, and there's one for each edge. Theta is a function of the holonomies around dual links. But the crucial part is this contribution. This is exactly the no, stop. This is exactly a path integral for first order Regge calculus if m is bigger than minus 1. And square root of 1 minus m as the interpretation of edge length, and theta is exactly the deficit angle. Indeed, it is the holonomy around that link. For m minus less than minus 1, you analytically continue. There is the explicit form that can be written down as well. This corresponds, if you want, to the wrong orientation for the edge length. And this is exponentially suppressed in this model. It's not cut out, it's just exponentially suppressed. And you can consider variation of the model, and the reason why the paper is in preparation and not prepared is that we're considering, first of all, what can go wrong under integration of the various variables of the assumption, what are the various properties, but we're also considering various, different variations on this model. Okay, the dynamical triangulation restriction, so how to fix the geometric data, is also kind of understood, and I can discuss that, but I'm still working on that. So I know something about it, but not all about it. Okay, now in my last 5 minutes, I go to the real unknown territory, and where I would say there are very few results. So let me very briefly sketch what different approaches that I mentioned in the during this talk, how these different approaches, loop quantum gravity, simplicial quantum gravity, approach the issue. This, of course, is very much simplified. I hope nobody gets offended by the simplification. So, in general, what you would expect in loop quantum gravity is that you pick up a kinematic of spin network state based on a graph that somehow approximates some continuum manifold with the representations, with the set of representation such that the spin network state approximates a given classical geometry of space at the kinematical level. And then what you want to study is the dynamics of these models by inserting the spin network states as boundaries here and developing the group field theory in perturbation theory. In group field theory, this means the following. You take a hugely populated, this is the number of Planck size three volumes in a cube given by an edge of the size of a billion times less than a quark. That gives 10 to the 24. So you take a hugely populated many particle state, multi-particle state, such that somehow approximates a continuum, some continuum object characterized by some smooth momentum field. And you study the dynamics of these states in perturbative expansion around the vacuum, analyzing, of course, hugely complicated Feynman amplitudes because the complexity of the Feynman diagram goes with the complexity of the state. In simplicial quantum gravity, people do a very similar thing. So they study either a discretized path integral so for a given triangulation in Regge calculus, or they sum over all triangulations of a given topology in certain limits of the parameters. And again, in the group field theory translation, this means either sum over all Feynman diagrams of a given topology with frozen momenta, with all with the same momenta, in the limit of this momenta going to zero, with appropriate randomization of the couplings, or just consider a single Feynman diagram and possibly very complicated, and compute the amplitude as a function of the parameters and see how it scales with the parameters. The general question is, are the Feynman diagrams the right tool? Well, from a group field theory, no. From a group field theory perspective, I would say no, simply because if the continuum is really many particle physics, well, then Feynman diagrams are not the most convenient way of analyzing them. So there are suggestions, and I'm not going into any detail about, from condensed matter and out of gravity systems that suggest that space-time is a sort of a condensate or a fluid phase of some fundamental constituents unknown, and I'm not going to develop on this, but simply because I don't have time, but I'm happy to discuss it for the little I know about it. From this condensed matter perspective, the real question is what are these atoms of space, whatever that exactly means? What is the microscopic theory? Okay, so the hypothesis that I want to put forward is the following. Well, that to look at group field theories from the standpoints of loop quantum gravity, spin form models, dynamical triangulation, and so on, is not the right thing to do if you want to study the continuum limit. that you have to take them, at least as an hypothesis, seriously as a discrete microscopic theory of the atoms of space, being spin network vertices or tetrahedra or whatever your best preferred representation is, and they analyze the question how a continuum space-time emerges. The real hypothesis is that the continuum is a coherent many-particle physics, comes from coherent many-particle physics for the GFT atoms at very low temperature. So basically when you can use a close to equilibrium, so when you can use an hydrodynamic approximation for the field theory. So research program that, so I said, this is a very speculative hypothesis, I guess. But you have a field theory, so it can be turned into a research program that may take from 1 to 10 years to 50, according to how good we are and whether it works or not. We need to develop and use statistical group field theory. That means, for example, in the Hamiltonian framework, you have to do the canonical and Hamiltonian structure, and I hope I can use the last 2 minutes reporting on the results on this canonical Hamiltonian structure of group field theories. Identify notion of temperature, and also this is in progress, but I'm not going to report on that. And then identify different phases at low temperature for large number of quanta. What you would like is to find a phase where you can use the hydrodynamic approximation, because we're identifying, if you want, by definition, the continuum space-time as a fluid phase for the intertwiners or simplices that constitute the quanta of these field theories. In this case, if this is realized, I mean, the continuum space may be a fundamentally quantum phenomenon, like it happens in superfluids or bosons and condensates and so on. It's not a classical limit, it's just a continuum approximation. And then you have to identify the hydrodynamic variables and extract the effective dynamics. Now, the only key thing that I want to mention is that the important issue to understand, probably even before going into the details, is what in condensed matter systems determines the topology of the fluid on which you can define your excitations and so on, so the topology of your emergent space-time, and how that depends on the field theory and the topology of the background space on which you base your field theory. The most likely thing is that because group field theories contain topology change, I would guess that the classical continuum theory emerging in the hydrodynamic limit of group field theories will be a classical theory on superspace. So those, like those on the basis of third quantized so-called formulation of gravity. Anyway, we can discuss that in private. Now I just report, if I can, on the results on the Hamiltonian analysis of group field theories. So actually on a specific model, and it is the one that gives the Regge amplitude, Regge-like amplitude that I mentioned at the beginning. So you take this kinetic term, the same that I introduced earlier with the Schrödinger-like operator, differential operator for each of the arguments of the field. You can do it in D dimensions, for a generic group, both Riemannian and Lorentzian. You consider the various S's as time variables, and the G, even if you are in a Lorentzian group, in the Lorentzian case, as space variables with respect to the field theory defined by this kinetic term. That means that for each argument to the field, there is one time variable. There's more than one time in this type of formalism, in this type of model. That means that the naive phase space is of one field plus the complex conjugate and a bunch of momenta, one for each time variable for each field. So there's more than one momentum for each field. So you need the so-called polymomentum or polysymplectic formulation a la de Donderbeil or Kanachnikov of field theory. Here I mentioned only the two-dimensional case for simplicity, but you can extend with the same results this treatment to higher dimensional models. The equations of motion are of this form. That means that you have a basis of solution spanned by plane waves that are solutions of second equation, if you want, times a generic plane wave, no solution of anything in the first variable, plus the other way around. So plane wave solutions of the first differential operator and times generic plane waves in the second variable, plus the complex conjugate. This is important because each class of solutions gives a subset of field modes, and it will give upon quantization a subalgebra of creation and annihilation operators. you can decompose the modes according to the sign of the Laplacian, or if you want, the sign of the Casimir of the group. And such eigenvalues, positive or negative in the Lorentzian case, and only positive or only negative according to your convention in the Riemannian case. You define your momenta. I'm not going through the analysis, of course, but you can define the momenta, the Hamiltonian density, plus some brackets, conserved quantities, and so on. This has been done not by us, but by Kanashnikov, luckily. We needed only to adapt his formulas to the group field theory case. What you need to do in the group field theory case is to define one independent Hamiltonian density for each time direction, and you can do this unambiguously. This is the Hamiltonian density, and from this you can define one independent Hamiltonian, so to say, for each time direction. So a generator of evolution along each time direction. And that is obtained by integrating the corresponding Hamiltonian density over all the rest. You write everything in Fourier modes, and you have some of the representations, the Fourier modes, the Fourier parameters, the momenta, with positive Casimir and negative Casimir in the Lorentzian case, and only positive Casimir in the Riemannian case. This is consistent in the sense that each Hamiltonian is independent of the corresponding time, as it should be, for a free field theory. The key thing, the surprising result, I've done, I know, and I've really done. So the surprising result is that in order to preserve the positivity of the Hamiltonian, or the full Hamiltonian, actually, the sum of all the different Hamiltonians that you get here, in order to preserve positivity of that, so to have a stable field theory, I mean semi-positivity, it turns out that this type of group field theories have to be quantized either using both statistics in the Riemannian case or using Fermi statistic in the Lorentzian case. It's just an outcome of the formulation. And so it depends on the specific model we have chosen, but on nothing else. So you go to quantization, you promote creation annihilation operators for these fundamental atoms of space that I mentioned from the beginning. You have a Fock structure that you can define in a neat way. And as I said, it turns out the Riemannian spin network vertices are bosons in the sense that you have to quantize them using Bose-Einstein statistics, and Lorentzian spin network vertices are fermions in this sense. And this is going to have consequences, important consequences for the properties of the system, of the corresponding system treated as a condensed matter system, because of course bosonic and fermionic systems are in different universality classes. And one can go on, and as I said, you can go on and Euclideanize the time variables, bound their integration, the partition function as usual, and define a notion of temperature this way, but I'm not going to elaborate on that. You can write down the ground state, and that is given basically by a low temperature, by the lowest values of the Casimir operator, so the smallest representations, which gives further support to the idea that the continuum is going to be given by very many spin network vertices with very low representations and not the other way around. So I conclude. We have at least a candidate. I should have put these large and the rest small, but I wanted to be optimistic. So we have a candidate for a macroscopic theory of the fundamental constituents of space. That works very well with your friends when you want to impress them. This is basically, as I said, a quantum field theory that is fully background independent in the sense of the actual space-time, but it's an ordinary field theory in the sense that it has a background space given by the group manifold. From this, a discrete space-time emerges as a Feynman diagram, but there is a rich and unexplored non-perturbative structure. It can be, and I see it this way, a common framework for different approaches to quantum gravity, and that means, in a sense it incorporates different approaches, but the point is that you can use, in this context, tools, ideas, results from different approaches to help each other out. That's at least how I would like to use it. And as I said, you can use ordinary field theory language and techniques to study, in particular, the statistical field theory and the many-body physics. And I see this as a way to realize the intriguing ideas of space-time as a condensate or a fluid, and of Einstein gravity as an emergent effective field theory. The only problem is that there is plenty of work to be done. Thank you.
Various times you wrote down inner product, sometimes this is inner product, sometimes one inner product. And on the right hand side, there was an expansion sum. And explicitly, the parameter lambda was the power of the inner. So obviously, this inner product depends on lambda. Mm-hmm. But the physical field theory knows not about physical quantum gravity, knows nothing about lambda.
Why? We don't know what lambda means.
What is it?
No, that's the answer. We don't know what lambda means, but I don't see why it cannot depend on an extra parameter. That may be related, for example, to the cosmological constant, and there are some ways to relate it in simplified contexts to the cosmological constant, a bare cosmological constant. So that's one possibility. So,
and then we must test.
Sorry?
Yeah,
in some models.
Test. And then the statement will be that in the zero cosmological constant case,
But that is the bare cosmological constant. You can, in this simplified context that I was mentioning, it's basically where you reproduce with matrix models usual dynamical triangulations. The same lambda enters like actually the exponential of the cosmological constant, but the bare one. And the continuum, so the physical space-time, is not going to use the bare cosmological constant. We know from dynamical triangulation that you have to renormalize that.
Which is this?
Yeah.
I mean, you also have this idea that, I mean, I do agree that this is really a nice way of looking at the issues that people have understood.
Thanks.
And also for the rest of the video also. But are there tensions and contradictions? So in particular, you said that loop quantum gravity is, for example, the way that G-man would do the master constraint program is only the first quantized version. And if I were taking a physical field theory, few weeks, if I just took that, the trigger, which is the first quantized version, that theory is not consistent in itself. It's not equilibrium, there will be problems with it. So are you?
So I'm saying, no, what I mean, maybe I should clarify better. What I mean is that you find a more direct link with the canonical quantization, either at the interpreting it as a first quantized version of these field theories, or by going to three level in these field theories. I'm not saying that that's a consistent restriction of these group field theories.
No, but are you saying that the loop quantum gravity is not?
I'm saying that. If you see it from a group field theory perspective, you expect corrections coming from beyond three level to loop quantum gravity.
So but there should be inconsistencies.
There is also another issue, which is that these theories include topology change. So maybe that for the trivial topology, the three level is perfectly fine, but these theories are not consistent as a restriction to trivial topology. You need to have, in the full theory, to have all the non-trivial ones. So it's not that that...
You are saying that this is... I'm
saying that there is extra stuff, yes, and you need it in the group field theory context, otherwise the group field theory context cannot be consistent.
Yeah, so there's a tension between
this viewpoint. I agree. And I would like to discuss it because I don't have a perfectly clear picture myself. So.
So in your formula there were a lot of sums with respect to the spinning modes. Mm-hmm. And in one case you mentioned that this sum is with respect to some specific spinning modes which
I consider one specific model. Involved? Sorry? Yeah, that's the proposal by Laurent. No. So, it's related to what we were discussing with Abai. And so, if you want to impose the classical equations of motion, that, at least morally, in absence of a direct link with the canonical quantization, and I mentioned that there's no specific group field theory model, except possibly the 3D case, where there is a direct link with canonical loop quantum gravity in the usual formalism. If you want to restrict to the classical level, in the group field theory perturbed by the expansion, you go to tree level. So if you want to impose the classical equations of motion that, as I said, again, morally are the equations of motion for the canonical theory, for the first quantized canonical theory, then you have to do the, restrict the sum to tree level. That is not what you, how you define the model. The model is defined by the generic perturbative sum, as in any field theory. A restriction that should have a clear link with canonical quantum gravity. Does it help?
I'd like to take some more questions. But is David Weiler here? The next speaker? He's not here very much.
No, he's there, I can point him with the laser.
If you could, while we take the rest of the questions, begin preparing here. So I'll check that.
Is this proposal of interpreting physical inequalities at the tree level transition amplitudes? Does it always give a positive inequality?
Sorry?
Does it give a positive inequality? Is it already
given? For the models we know, it does. For the models we know, it does, like for the Balatroni model, for the Ponzano-Reggio model, and so on. I don't think there is, as far as I know, there's no general results, like a very general proof that the three-level truncation of any spinform model is positive. I may have misunderstood something, but as far as I understand, there's no general statement.
As far as picking up on the question of Alejandro, as far as I know, as far as I know, concerning the positivity of the process, it's only proven in the manifest. This is the result of the trial.
I know the result, but we can check. But I remember actually that it stands to the Lorentzian case as well, for the Balakrein model. But I mean, we can check that. Maybe you're right. I mean, I recall bad that the.
I have some questions. Okay, let's suppose that this proposal works, and that the treatment of the is now more than for in this case. So, what is, if you got that situation, what does the theory actually mean?
Well, so first of all, and that is the part that it would be harder to keep under control if we need to, is the all non-trivial topologies are included. And that we know already from dynamical triangulations or other approaches, it's very hard to work with. But even before you go to non-trivial topologies, the loop corrections are not necessarily of non-trivial topology, related to non-trivial topologies. They may be corrections, but still to trivial topology graphs. And those, as I said before to Abba, I'm not sure what the interpretation for those is from a canonical perspective. And, I mean, we have to discuss that because we can just help each other.